Fan Drive Time, SportsCenter 590 The Fan. Blue Jays, Red Sox tonight. Rogers Center, Alek Manoah on the hill. Maybe the final regular season start for Alek Manoah. If things go according to plan for the Blue Jays, it will be the final regular season start for him, and he won't start final day of the regular season on Wednesday against the Orioles because they'll have already sewn up home field advantage in the wild card round. We shall see. Let's talk to our man, Arash Madani of Sportsnet. They're going to celebrate after this game, win or lose, because they clinched the playoff spot yesterday, and that's fine. That's cool. And John Schneider said they should celebrate because you don't know how many times you have to celebrate. You got to celebrate your accomplishments. I'm with him on that. How can we get, like, somebody has to be the person that brings champagne celebrations to, like, ordinary people in everyday life. Like, how do we, because I would love to have one. I just don't know what the opportunity is to do that.
How about a day that ends with Y, Ben?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there you go.
Good call.
Go, on your way home tonight,
yeah.
Stop, get some bubbles.
Yes.
Walk into your house. Bring the family together. Okay. You all huddle up. And then you just pop the bottle and just start spraying it on everybody.
Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, you're right. It is Friday. They don't use, like, the expensive stuff, right? Like, it's probably... Yeah, maybe not.
I think the expensive stuff is in the back. They don't spray the expensive stuff all over themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
When the Yankees won the World Series in 2009, I was in their room and they had the Moet, which is the good stuff.
Yeah.
The Miami Heat, I remember when they won their first one with LeBron, Shane Battier was double fisting bottles of Dom Perignon. So, yeah. So the NBA does it a little different than the rest of them.
Yeah. Ace of spades. Yeah, that'd be good. That's the good stuff. Yeah, it's going to be weird, though, if they do lose the game. Not that they shouldn't do it. Again, all in favor of doing champagne celebrations. But first of all, it'll be weird because Alek Manoah performed maybe poorly. Like, that doesn't happen. But, yeah, we've seen this team at times recently play some uneven baseball, and Nick Pivetta's had his moments this season. If they lose the game... I think if they win the game, they're going to celebrate, like, the final out, and then as if that was the game that clinched, and they're going to have an on-field thing. If they lose the game, there's got to be an element of sheepishness to it, no?
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what the plan is, but I would suspect that after the Red Sox kind of leave the field and do their high fives, it's a ladies and gentlemen, maybe a video for 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 60 seconds or something, and then announcing on the way to the postseason or something like that.
Yeah.
That's the way I'd do it anyway.
No, that makes
game day operations expertise.
Yeah. Maybe that's another career path for you. Maybe you add that responsibility onto your plate. Not that you need more responsibility, but, you know. Sounds good. Mm. Like, yeah. This is stage one, right? Had to make the playoffs, especially they added a postseason team after winning 91 games and the investment in free agency that this team has seen over the last couple of years. Had to make the playoffs. So job one accomplished. Do you think there will be some level of relief for these guys? Because there is still lots more to play for, not just during the regular season and home field advantage, but like, winning a World Series is still very much in the cards, and it would still feel very disappointing-ish if they lost in the wild card round. Do you think there's a level of pressure relieved by clinching a postseason berth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Checks off the first box. This was the mission. Okay, and I also think, Ben, after tonight, it really starts to narrow the focus. It's the, okay, now it's for keeps. And in a lot of ways, the last 2-3 weeks have felt like the playoffs, just to punch your ticket into October. I mean, I go back to Labor Day Monday. I think that's really effectively when the postseason started, because they went into Baltimore for a doubleheader there. They had the Wednesday game that they lost, the Brian Baker fiasco, or maybe that was the Tuesday game rather. And then Wednesday, and then that night, Manoah stared down the Orioles, and then he was just masterful the next night. That's really when this playoff run began, because they had two series with the Orioles, two series with the Rays, and they came out above 500 against both of those teams along the way. So now it really starts to get real, because home field is a big priority for this team.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, okay, so they lost 2 out of 3 to the Yankees. It's the only series they've lost this month, and they've been playing teams that they have to beat to stay where they are in the standings. I mean, they won that 5-game series against the Rays. They split the 4-game series at the Trop after it could have really gone off the rails after those first two games. They took care of the Orioles, right? They only lost a couple of games to the Orioles when they had 7 against them this month. I can't help but feel, and despite the last two games against the Yankees, that's the stuff that makes me bullish about what this team can do in the postseason, because those were pressure-packed games. Because now it felt like it was only a matter of time until they clinched the playoff spot. Going into this month, the Orioles were right there, Arash.
Yeah, no question. And I remember what felt kind of like bulletin board-ish material when we were leaving Pittsburgh on Labor Day Sunday. You know, we were saying that, you know, Teoscar Hernandez said, this, we're going into the biggest series of our season. Ross Stripling after said, we're the better team. We just have to go show it and do it. And they did. And you talk about the split at the Trop last weekend, Thursday through Sunday, and this Yankees series too. It's wild that on the eve of October, we're still talking about this, Ben. But it really feels with the Jays that if they play tidy, clean, smart baseball, they can compete with anybody. The issue is the first couple of games against Tampa, throughout the series against the Yankees, it was sloppy. It was undisciplined. Shoot, at times it was brain dead. Baseball. You know, Vlad took a lot of heat, a lot of headlines. I didn't see one about Adam Simber. Not just throwing the ball away. Okay, that happens. But then crouching over and reacting negatively, and then another run comes in and scores. That's the kind of junk that just can't happen, and yet it has. So this team has to clean it up and quickly. And if they do, I really believe they have just as good a shot as anybody not named the Astros to get to the World Series.
Yeah, rightly or wrongly, people thought that John Schneider was going to be part of the solution to that style of baseball, right? That departed with Charlie Montoyo, that any sloppiness, any lack of effort, that he's maybe
there's
not...
There's no Midas touch. There's no silver bullet.
Yeah, but this does fall on again, rightly or wrongly, on the lap of the manager when you have in consecutive games, and you're right.
Does it though? I don't know if it does. I mean, these are grown ass men who are supposed to make grown ass men plays. Mm-hmm. At some point, you know, they're the ones getting paid. They're the ones who are out there. I don't know if it's on John Schneider that Bo Bichette's, you know, barehanding the ball and firing it. It's not on John Schneider that Vlad hasn't hustled. Vlad knows he has to hustle. Like, Adam Simber knows that if he makes a throwing error to the plate, he's not supposed to crouch over and turn his back to the play. He knows he has to go cover the plate. Like, it's... I am of the belief that at this point, it's up to these dudes to do it. This is not Little League. This is not Pop Warner. This is not, you know, Bantam hockey. These are professionals. These are adults. And it's on them to go do it.
I thought you were going to say, this is not junior tennis. Like, you didn't do it. Where was the tennis comparison there? There wasn't one.
Well, all right. You're out there on your own in tennis.
Yeah,
there
that's
no coaching
true.
To help you.
That's right. No, yeah. It's a great point. Okay, so what's your confidence level that's that and that it's over with, and okay, they got their wake-up call? I will say that, like, on the final game of the Yankees series, and it felt like Vlad came up with the game-tying, well, he did come up with the game-tying RBI, but that was going to change the narrative of the game, and it was this guy, day after getting ripped by his head coach, comes up large and seemed super focused, that it was going to be end up being mm-hmm. a positive thing for the team, and then the Simber thing happens. Like, what's your level of confidence that going into the games that really, really, really matter next month, that we're not going to see that?
I don't know. And I'm being honest when I say that. I mean, we are 156 games into this thing, and it feels like there are still a bunch of questions around the ball club right now. So, you know, you would think by now that these things would get cleared up and have been cleared up, and they haven't been over the last week or so. But, you know, The stakes are big. The margin for error is small. All those things are cliches, but they're real. And you want to have crooked numbers under R and H. You cannot have a crooked number under E and expect to win. You just can't.
But the
backflip game, Texas Rangers taught us that, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It was three in that one inning. And poor Elvis Andrews forgot how to play baseball. But yeah. poor Adrian,
Beltre.
No, but Beltre, yeah, yeah. Okay. Maybe a little bit. It was mostly Elvis Andrews. But so I do separate the errors from the stuff that we saw from Vlad and the second part of the Simber play too, right? Because here's the thing. Bo Bichette's going to commit his errors. He has. He's committed the second most in baseball this season.
What about the Bichette play in shallow center?
Yep. No,
what about
point.
The Bichette play stepping off second base?
Yeah. Now, it was a little bit fluky, but yeah. No, do you not make a point of separation between the physical errors and the mental ones?
Kind of, but I just don't think they matter in October, you know? Because it ultimately is it's not the try hard league, it's the get it done league, as your good friend Josh Donaldson would say. I think, you know, those evaluations are something that we talk about in April, May, June, July, August and September, and then especially October. It doesn't matter what happens. It's the end result that matters the most.
Yep. It's all about getting results. So the Blue Jays have their best lineup out there today, as you would understand they would, especially considering the off day yesterday. Danny Jansen's the DH, which is actually, that is their best offensive lineup right now, the way he's swinging the bat, even with Alejandro Kirk behind the plate. I wonder, though, and I know there's still something to play for here, but there's some guys, it's a long season, some guys are nursing some bumps and bruises. Do you think, like, the principals all play the rest of these six games if there's something mathematically available for them? Like, I'm talking about George Springer, who's nursing the elbow thing, and, you know, that maybe a Vlad. I know Vlad and Bo, they like to play every day, but do you think there will be any resting of the regulars as we approach the final day of the regular season?
I would assume that they're going to handle this the way they would any other week unless, whatever the right word is there, they clinch home field. If, for instance, on Monday night in Baltimore or Tuesday night in Baltimore, they clinch, I would suspect that Wednesday is going to be a dog's breakfast out there. That's the kind of read I've gotten on the situation. But it's important for them to clinch. Now, that said, could there be a scenario where Springer sits a game before a clinching situation? Absolutely. I think he might be the only one, though, Ben.
Yeah.
You know, that elbow's been a thing. But I think the rest of the way, these guys are going to play until they can clinch. And then if they can't, it's, you know, full systems go. They get the off day on Thursday,
right,
next Thursday, before the wild card. So between now and then, I think they're managing to win while trying to manage the bodies of these guys.
So let's think about that lineup on Friday, and it's going to depend on the matchup they get, right? Like, they could have a lefty on the hill if they're playing the Mariners, and it's Robbie Ray. It could be a righty. You don't know the different scenarios, but I mentioned it. This team is best configured today with the players available, which does not include Lourdes Gurriel Jr. or Santiago Espinal to a lesser degree. But as this lineup, with the players available, Danny Jansen as the DH, that's the best offensive lineup. He and Kirk have to be in the lineup every day right now. And you know what? Even with Gurriel Jr. Go ahead.
Do you have Tapia ahead of Gurriel?
Do I prefer Tapia in the lineup over Lourdes Gurriel Jr.? No, I don't.
Right.
Yeah, but okay.
I think Merrifield's your second baseman. And you flip flop the DH with Kirk and Jansen, and if at this point it's hard to think that any of them are going to need a day unless it's really significant. But I'm with you. I effectively believe that tonight's lineup is the lineup next Friday, pitching matchup notwithstanding, in case Jackie Bradley has, you know, crazy numbers against somebody. But I wonder about Gurriel. I mean, he's only started running the bases, what, yesterday, today, something like that?
Yeah.
So when's the last time he's had real live at-bats?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And it's like, and even if he's in the lineup on Friday, and I know you still got to run the bases if you get on base as the DH, but you have to move around a lot less than you do if you're playing left field. Like, if he's not the DH, which means that Tapia is in the lineup as the left fielder and Jansen's not in the lineup on Friday. I could see that as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you. At some point, Gurriel's got to play. Like, he's got to play Tuesday and or Wednesday, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, I think so for sure. I mean, and this gets to a point that I was talking to Ricky Romero about earlier. So this is, we're learning about one, how this three-game wild card series is going to look as far as the advantage the home team has. And we'll see. We'll, you know, after years, maybe we'll have a good sample that, hey, 60% of the home teams win these series, or maybe it's closer to 50-50. And it's not as relevant as we maybe think it is. The second part of it, though, is the bye thing. With those, the two teams in each league that get the byes in the American League, it's the Astros and the Yankees, that this game is such a timing game, Arash, that I could see that not necessarily benefiting those two teams. We've seen time and time again that a team hot at the end of the regular season, they just keep playing right through the wild card round and into the, and they go on incredible runs. We'll see if you got 4 days off if you're the Yankees and Astros. Sure, you're
not good.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be good.
We have seen a few times teams cruise through the championship series and then get a bunch of days off before the World Series and totally be off. The 2012 Tigers comes to mind. Now, that said, the Washington Nationals swept the Cardinals in 2019 and they went on to win the World Series too. But I think a couple of days of rest is good. But in a best of five divisional series, I'm not sure if that rest is going to be that huge of an advantage. Now, in the National League, I look at the Dodgers hitters. They're vets. Mm-hmm. They've been through it. Depending on what happens with the Mets in Atlanta, you know, I don't know what's going to happen there. I think Houston will be fine. I wonder about the Yankees. So it's a very valid point, and track record in history has a way of validating it when you talk about the break before the World Series, if a team cruises through winning the pennant.
Yeah. How do you think they're going to use the bullpen here? Because I think Jordan Romano has proved that he loves to work. He loves to throw pitches, and six outs is not a big deal for him. I don't know if you just, like, plan for that in every close game, if you just treat him like prime Mariano Rivera, and if you have a lead and it's a one-run lead, you don't even mess around by even throwing good relievers like Anthony Bass in the eighth inning. It's Romano for six outs no matter what if it's a one-run game.
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all matter to this of going about it. I think what we've seen from, especially from Schneider, is that so much is situationally based. And where they are in the lineup, what Romano's workload has been, et cetera, et cetera. I believe that we'll absolutely see Romano for six outs, but I don't think it's an exclusive right away, immediately. That's just the way it's going to be moving forward type thing because we're in the playoffs. I really believe that it's going to be situationally based each time.
I want to get your take on Tua. By the way, we have a, so people didn't see it, Tua Tagovailoa. Well, first of all, go back to Sunday, and he smacked his head pretty hard in the Bills game in the first half and departed, and then miraculously returned despite the fact that he had rubber legs trying to get to the sideline, and it was deemed that, no, that was a back injury, despite, you know, all evidence that we've seen people suffer brain trauma. They kind of look like that, but okay. Take you at your word. And then yesterday in the Thursday nighter against the Bengals, suffers a horrific-looking head injury and goes into the fencing response, which is, like, terrifying. He ends up being carted off the field, taken to an ambulance to the hospital, but everything apparently was good enough for him to get on the flight. He's also just released a statement, Arash. I don't know if you've seen this.
I saw it, yeah.
I want to thank everyone for all their prayers and support since the game last night. It was difficult to not be able to finish the game and be there with my teammates, but I am grateful for the support and care I've received from the Dolphins, my friends and family, and all the people who have reached out. I'm feeling much better and focused on recovering so I can get back out on the field with my teammates. What were you thinking watching that thing? What have you thought of the media coverage? Well, I mean, the in-game coverage, a new media partner in Amazon with the NFL, and how they were trying to navigate a developing story and the way it's continued today.
Well, from the Dolphins' standpoint, I thought it was negligent and I thought it was malpractice. They can say whatever they want about the back injury. Mike Tomlin did a thing, an interview, on a podcast with Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor and Channing Crawford. I can't remember the name of it. Maybe The Pulse or something like that. And Ryan Clark nearly died in Denver playing in altitude because of some kind of kidney ailment, etc. And he wanted to play the next time. And he thought he had a good argument. He brought some doctors in, whatever. And Tomlin stopped him about, you know, 45 seconds into what he thought was going to be a 10-minute meeting and said, if you were my son right now, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. And Tomlin's point is, as a head coach, you have to show leadership. Leadership means you are looking out for your player and the player's best interests and the player's health and to protect the player from themselves often. Here's my thought on this, Ben, that with Tua, with the Dolphins, and really with the league, nobody wanted to be the adult in the room because it was just about winning the game. And if Tua had dislocated his shoulder, if he had pulled a hamstring, he would be sitting. And doctors will tell you there's two things you don't mess with. You don't mess with the heart and you don't mess with the brain in anything. Except, apparently, violent collision sports. Tua Tagovailoa should have been nowhere near that stadium. And then to fly home and the rest, it's just negligent and it drips of malpractice.
Yeah, I mean, and we're seeing other head coaches speak. Like, yeah, you mentioned Mike Tomlin, that story. John Harbaugh said he was astonished to see Tua even play in that football game. Like, the next couple of days, the NFL is the king of spin, right? They're going to try and make it. I think they said they're going to open up the investigation, which is still ongoing, apparently, into the independent evaluation of Tua's head injury on Sunday. They're going to open that up to the public. They're going to release the findings, just like the Dan Snyder investigation, which we all know everything about, right? Like, how do you expect the next couple of days to look?
I expect that it will blow over by Sunday at 1 o'clock when they put the football on the tee and people are checking their parlays and their fantasy leagues.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Just like everything else in football, that it just ends up being one big distraction and the Dolphins won't be playing and there'll be so many storylines. I mean, think about your show on Monday, Ben.
Yeah.
Are you going to bring up Tua on Monday?
Well, depending. And if
probably
the story,
not, though.
If this story continues.
Not unless he dies. I mean, not to be flippant, but really, I mean, we just saw a boxer 5 days after getting KO'd died today. It almost feels like, what is the threshold? Where is the point where somebody's going to just, you know, how many more former athletes have to be cripples in their 40s and have their brains be mush? It doesn't matter because it's the entertainment product and it's sickening, it's gross, but it's never going to change.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't help matters when you got a first-year, 39-year-old head coach, too, at the helm, right? Like, that's...
I don't think that matters. No, I don't know about that. I don't think... You know, I'll put it this way. If it was a 60- or 70-year-old coach, I think what you'd be telling me is, can't teach an old dog new tricks. These guys are meatheads. Mm. They still think water makes you weak. You need a progressive young guy in there. I think it's the culture of football. It's the culture of a violent sport. It's the unspoken teammate kind of looks at another teammate and be like, hey, man, you look okay. We need you on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Then what are you supposed to do?
No, the responsibility has to be taken out of the athlete's hand. And I thought that's kind of what we did with the independent evaluator. But Sunday was weird.
How independent is that evaluator?
I don't know. I don't know. I hope to find out. But fingers crossed on that one, Arash. Buddy, great to chat.
Yes, sir.
I can't wait till we do it again.
Look, likewise, my man. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your champagne celebration with the fam.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? We should have one. Just you and me, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, see you, Arash.
See you, bud.
It's Arash Madani. When we come back, we'll continue the Tua conversation with somebody who would know, former NFL offensive lineman, Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, joins me next. The Fan Drive Time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Yeah, it was one of those sports moments that go beyond sports yesterday in the Thursday Nighter. I mean, my wife was watching the game with me, and yeah, she was interested, and she never watches sports. Like, is never interested in what I'm watching, but this is going to be a topic of conversation that goes beyond sports. I'm talking about Tua Tagovailoa and the hit that he sustained yesterday against the Cincinnati Bengals and the fencing response and like the everything that went into it, including last Sunday, him returning to a football game against the Buffalo Bills and potentially suffering two concussions in the matter of 5 days. Let's talk to Ross Tucker, as we do every Friday of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, former NFL offensive lineman. Ross, yeah, that was heinous. Like, and you're a guy that's been around people that have suffered head trauma and concussions. Like, what were you thinking watching that yesterday?
Well, a couple thoughts, and this is something, it's interesting because it feels pretty rare to have to lead my show, the Ross Tucker Podcast, twice with the same topic in the same week. You know, I mean, I started Monday's show with Tua. I started today's show with Tua, and really to me, Monday remains the bigger issue. I think because a lot of people feel as if last night was his second concussion in a 5-day period, and because of how grotesque the fencing posture is and how difficult that is to look at, I think that's why it jumped out to so many people. I've seen the fencing posture before. It's very scary. It's obviously not a good thing. But I am still fixated on what happened Sunday. You know, to me, Sunday is the bigger concern because guys are going to have their heads slammed to the ground in the sport of football. They're going to get concussions sometimes, and at times they're going to get the fencing posture. So as difficult as that is to look at, that to me is not the talking point. The talking point is what happened Sunday, where 99% of the public believed that Tua Tagovailoa suffered a concussion, right? The back of his head slammed against the ground against the Buffalo Bills. He grasped his face mask on the ground. He got up and shook his head, and then he stumbled. Everybody thinks that that's a concussion. Now, Tua and the Dolphins are saying he did not suffer a head injury and that it was his back that was bothering him and his back locked up. I have a really tough time believing that. And there's kind of two different issues here, right, Ben? Like, on the one hand, we can talk about what I think and what I think they should do. But what's maybe more important, I don't know what the conversation up there is, but, you know, United States, football is by far the most popular sport. And I got so many text messages from people like your wife, from casual fans who have kids that are 9 and 10 like my kids, saying, why is he back in this game? I thought the NFL had a concussion protocol. I don't understand why he's back in this game. So in the court of public opinion, you know, it's already been adjudicated, right? Like, people have already formed their opinions. My belief is I have a really tough time believing that it was a back injury. And the only solution I've come up with is, I guess what I'm going to call the duck theory, right? Where, like, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and waddles like a duck, then let's treat it like a duck, and the guy can't play in the game again. In other words, when in doubt, sit them out. I understand that the doctor cleared him and the independent neurologist cleared him, and we're going to find out exactly how that happened and exactly what they saw based on this investigation. But I still think it's a really bad look for the NFL in general, for the sport of football in particular, or maybe I flip those two, that he came back in that game Sunday, which made what happened last night, you know, a million times worse.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. That last Sunday against the Bills is what we should be talking about, right? Like, not yesterday looked horrific, but it looked even worse in the understanding of what happened in that football game. And yeah, I'm getting some clarification on Twitter, or at least I saw some, and I assume this is correct, that it's actually not an independent medical evaluator. It's an unaffiliated neurological consultant approved by the NFL and the NFLPA. And maybe I'm just parsing, but that's a little bit different, right? It's a guy who does have a couple of bosses, and one of them's the NFL and the NFLPA. And okay, he's not unaffiliated with them. He's just approved by both parties. And this is where I think you, as a former player, Ross, you can give me some insight here, because yeah, it looked like the wobble on Sunday was related to hitting his head, but they claimed it was a back, and he went through, I'm sure, the battery of tests that you go through to try and diagnose a concussion. I imagine it's possible for someone to have suffered a concussion and still pass those tests, and but still have, like, those are not 100% foolproof tests, right, Ross?
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, I think that they're pretty good tests, but you don't know for sure, especially if the player is saying there's no head injury. You know, if the player is saying that, you know, I got several concussions during my career, never came out of a game because it was kind of a different era, and because I never said anything, you know?
Yeah.
So if the player says it's his back and says, no, my head's fine, my back just tightened up on me, it's a weird situation, because is the affiliated or unaffiliated or whatever you just said, are they supposed to call the player a liar? You know, doctors are taught to listen to their patients,
yeah,
right? So if they're saying, if the patient's complaining of a back injury and he passes the head exam, are you supposed to have him sit out anyway? It's not an easy question to answer, which is why I am of the mindset that if millions of people watch a guy slam his head, and he gets up and shakes his head, and then he stumbles, he should be out of the rest of the game. Like, let's not even put it in the doctor's hands in that situation. If there's any doubt, sit him out.
Yeah. What's going to be really interesting here, Ross, is when he plays again, because Tua in his statement talked about getting back on the field, right? You know he wants to get back out there. I can't imagine what I'm going to feel watching him back on a football field. And I know guys return during the course of a season after concussions, and I imagine it's not on Sunday, next Sunday, of course, because they just played yesterday. But I like, what do you imagine the news cycle and the way the Dolphins handle this going forward is going to look like?
Well, so I think he'll be fine because I think he's got 10 days before the next game, and I think he'll pass all the protocols by that next game because of how much time he has. But we'll have to see. Only time will tell in that regard. But I do think that's why it was so scary to me, is because I'm pretty well-versed in this stuff because I follow the latest research closely from the Concussion Legacy Foundation because I obviously have some concerns personally about CTE and where I'll be at in the future, but also just with the sport of football. And second impact syndrome, second concussion symptom, is a really, really scary thing, which is why last night was so concerning. And I think I even tweeted at Ross Tucker NFL, even though I don't personally believe it, man, I hope that it really was his back and not his head on Sunday. Because if he got a second concussion within 4 or 5 days, that's real bad.
Yeah, it really is. And hope for the best. And boy, man, you're right. Like, there is enough time for him to get back in under center by Sunday. It's hard for me to imagine it. But yeah, I mean, it was hard for me to imagine him playing in yesterday's game. And there he was. I do want to talk about some other stuff with you, Ross. And I was really enjoying reading the Twitter thread from Tyler Palumbas, former offensive lineman, about Josh McDaniels, who is now 0-3 in three games with the Raiders in his second franchise as the head coach, and got fired after a couple of seasons with the Broncos. So how much, we talk about this in baseball, how much is being a manager about X's and O's, and how much of it is just relationships and keeping everybody together and being a good a people person? How much is it in football? Because I imagine it's way more, the X's and O's are way more important in football, obviously, than baseball, because, yeah, that's a huge part of winning and losing is the plays that you run. But how much is the personality part a factor for head coaches?
I think it's significant. I really do. Especially for the head coach, right? Because the coordinators are more tasked, in my mind, with the X's and O's part of it. I think the head coach sets the tenor of the organization, sets the culture, and, you know, it goes a long way towards picking the people. And notice how I said people and not players, but picking the people in terms of coaches and players that are on the team. And, you know, the part of it that really jumped out to me, there's two things here, Ben. One is, you know, it is surprising the Raiders are 0-3. My issue isn't with Josh McDaniels. My issue is with Mark Davis. They won so many close games with Rich Bisaccia last year, even after all the Gruden emails came out, he got fired and the organization was in total disarray. For him to right that ship and get them to the playoffs, I thought was an incredible coaching job. And I couldn't believe that they fired him, that they moved on from him to go with Josh McDaniels. You know, Mark Davis decided that Bisaccia wasn't good enough for him, and now I think he's paying the price. As for, you know, some of the comments McDaniels said and what Tyler Palumbas put out there, the comment about, guys, don't worry about quarterback, I can turn a high school quarterback into an all-pro quarterback, is just so comical and insulting. But I got to tell you, Ben, you know, and I tweeted this, at Ross Tucker NFL, I've heard a lot of stuff like that behind the scenes over the years. I've heard a lot of comments that former Patriots coaches make to people privately, basically diminishing Tom Brady and what he did and propping them up. They're absolutely permeated a belief within the Patriots coaching staff that they were the reasons for the team's success more than Brady. And it's just so ridiculous and so disrespectful. Like, for them to go out of their way to tell people that, it's just comical. It really is. Like, it's insulting.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm thinking Brian Hoyer is not going out there and putting up 45 this Sunday. Now, I think Tom Brady had plenty to do with the success in New England over the years. Back to the Raiders, though, for a second, though, Ross, in that division as a whole, because we just expected that to be a total juggernaut division. And, okay, the Chiefs and Broncos are both 2-1. I think we all have a skeptical eye about the Broncos, the way they've really struggled to score. And the Chiefs, too, after the offensive explosion week one against the Cardinals, hasn't looked like the same team offensively. Chargers feel like they're having the season from hell with the Herbert injury and then Joey Bosa being out. And then the Raiders 0-3. Like, what do you make of that division now 3 weeks into the season?
Yeah, I think right now it's not as good as I thought it was. You know, I think everybody would agree with that. The Broncos are kind of a mess right now. The Raiders, we mentioned, they're the only 0-3 team in the NFL. The Chargers are having their annual horrible injury luck, which at some point maybe it's not luck anymore. And I think the Chiefs are still good. I think the Chiefs are still a good team and the best team in the division.
Yeah. Yeah, there is only one undefeated team now in the NFL, too, after the Dolphins lost yesterday, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Raiders are the only winless team in the NFL. Does that say anything? We're only 3 weeks in for there only to be one undefeated team and one winless team. Does that say anything to you?
Yeah, it says that there's a lot of parity in the NFL. It's kind of hard to believe. I mean, we're not even to October yet. And it's surprising, and it's exactly what the NFL wants and the NFL is looking for. I think it's phenomenal that it's like this. You know, it's interesting, though, because I love it as a former player. I think a lot of people, not that people want teams to be winless, but they like great teams. They like powerhouse teams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I, despite the loss to the Dolphins, I do think the Bills are a powerhouse team when they get fully healthy. And the Eagles, yeah, they might be a powerhouse team. We might have a Super Bowl preview, though, in Philly this weekend. I mean, that's a little bit in jest, but, man, the Jags look legit. And you talk about parity. This is what's supposed to happen, right? Like, you're supposed to go through lean years. You're supposed to draft high, and then you're supposed to turn it around quick. Are the Jags doing that? Like, are you a Jag believer right now?
Absolutely. Listen. First of all, they've got a lot of talent from all of the high draft picks they've had in recent years and all the money they've spent in recent years. Secondly, they've won two NFL games back-to-back by 24 points or more. If you do that, you're good. I mean, I don't care who you're playing. You're good if you're doing that. And it's because I think they like their coach. You know, they went from a coach that pretty clearly they hated to a coach that won a Super Bowl that I think that they really like. And that makes a big difference. I've been on teams with new coaches. I've been on teams with new coaches when you get on a roll and all of a sudden you think you're as good as anybody. You think you're going to win the Super Bowl. And right now, the Jags are a young team that think they're as good as anybody. I don't blame them.
The aforementioned Buffalo Bills take their 2-1 record into Baltimore, where they play a Ravens team that's also 2-1. I mean, both teams could easily be 3-0, but the Ravens would be 3-0 if they were able to hold on to a 21-point fourth quarter lead against the Dolphins. And Lamar Jackson looks insane. I mean, this is a former MVP, so it's not totally unexpected. Do you see the Ravens on that upper echelon AFC level with the Bills and the Chiefs?
I do. Those are the three best teams in the AFC. And I'd be surprised, frankly, if anybody other than those three teams ends up representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. Those, to me, are clearly the three best teams.
All right, before I let you go, Ken Dorsey with the freak out after the loss to the Dolphins. Is that anything other than fodder for media people? Like, does anybody inside? I know there was the guy that put the hand up in front of the camera to block the freak out. I don't know why. I kind of liked it. Like, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm happy that he's that upset about that conclusion.
1,000% Loved it. Well, I don't see the negative at all. Game was over. He was frustrated. I think the players love it. The fans love it. They want him to care that much. They were as frustrated as him. It's kind of refreshing sometimes to know that the guy's as upset and as mad as you are.
Yeah. We'll see if they can turn it around. Great matchup this weekend in Baltimore. Ross, always great to chat. We'll talk again next week.
Awesome. Take care. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ross. Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, hosts the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Follow him on Twitter as well. He is great, and you can hear him on this show every Friday as we break down everything that is surrounding the National Football League, including this Tua Tagovailoa story, which is not going anywhere. I wanted to laugh when he said, you know, Tua, there's 10 days now between Thursday and the next Sunday night that the Dolphins play a game, and you could pass concussion protocol and be in that game. And I was like, no. But yeah, like, yeah, maybe, right? Like, that's a legitimate possibility. He played 4 days after suffering a concussion, what has to be a concussion. And it's not just the neurological test that this affiliated doctor performs on the athlete. There are certain symptoms that are preventative from allowing the player to return to the game. One of them is the fencing response. So, like, even if they didn't give two of the test after yesterday, they're like, you did the fencing response. You obviously suffered a concussion. You cannot return to this game. You're in concussion protocol. The other one is what he suffered on Sunday, if it was related to brain trauma. Now, I guess, and Ross has a great point that as a doctor, you can't just tell somebody they're suffering symptoms. You do have to listen to the patient in some respect. And if he said it was my back, like I felt my back go out, what are you supposed to do? But we'll see. This independent investigation is apparently taking place. All right, it's time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Blue Jays, Red Sox, Nick Pivetta, Alek Manoah. No shock here. Blue Jays are heavy favorites, minus 195 to win the baseball game. The Red Sox plus 170. The total is 8. Elsewhere in the American League, as the Yankees are home in search of Aaron Judge's 62nd home run. And by the way, Frankie Lasagna made the trip to New York. He's jet setting. And the other guy also should be mentioned. The other guy has surfaced, and thank goodness he has a sense of humor about it. Jimmy Kimmel interviewed him yesterday, and I forget his first name. His last name is Mulligan, but Kyle Mulligan is an electrician, and he had a great sense of humor about it. So that really did warm my heart, because I don't know if I'd be feeling the same way. But no, he surfaced yesterday, and apparently he's going to be flown out to New York City for New Year's Eve so he can watch the ball drop, which was a comical moment. Yankees hosting the Orioles. Yankees minus 175 favorites. Orioles plus 148 to keep their postseason hopes alive. Astros hosting the Rays. Heavy favorites minus 180. Rays plus 155. And the Mariners also trying to lock down their postseason spot. They are minus 235. A's plus 200. And to win the American League, the Blue Jays third favorites at plus 750. Obviously, Astros, Yankees at the top of that. Aaron Judge to record a walk in his first plate appearance against the Orioles tonight. That's paying plus 400. George Springer to hit a home run tonight against Nick Pivetta. Well, it doesn't have to be Nick Pivetta, just against the Red Sox in the game, plus 540. And it is Bat Flip Friday. Any two players to hit a home run of Ronald Acuna Jr., Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, and CJ Cron, that is paying plus 700. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Perhaps Alek Manoah's final start of the regular season coming tonight down at Rogers Center against a Boston Red Sox team that is finishing dead last in the American League East, but coming off three straight victories over the Baltimore Orioles. So red hot, maybe. Hey, even J.D. Martinez was hitting home runs yesterday. We'll see what the Red Sox have in store for the Blue Jays as they will celebrate either way after the game with a champagne celebration after officially clinching a playoff spot yesterday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday. This has been the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.